Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Julie Ellenbecker, president of Ellenbecker Investment Group. EIG believes in the importance of education, allowing people to gain the knowledge to feel confident in their personal decisions. This show highlights the unique financial perspectives of its many guests, including economists, attorneys, book authors, business owners, and tax professionals. It is provided for general information purposes only and does not consider your particular investment objectives or financial situation and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for you. Before acting on information on this show, strongly consider seeking advice from your own financial advisor. The opinions expressed on Money Sense do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Ellenbecker Investment Group employees and leaders. Please enjoy today's show.
Money Sense is brought to you by Ellenbecker Investment Group, four-time recipient of the Better Business Bureau Torch Award for business ethics and integrity. Ellenbecker Investment Group is the only Wisconsin investment company to receive this prestigious award more than once by providing exceptional planning and extraordinary service each and every day. Go to ellenbecker.com and listen to Money Sense Saturdays at 2 and Sundays at noon.
Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Jamie Williams, Wealth Advisor for Ellenbecker Investment Group. Ellenbecker Investment Group is located in Pewaukee, just north of I-94, between Highway 164 and Highway F in Ridgeview Corporate Park. And we're also located in the village of Whitefish Bay in the Equitable Bank building across from Winkies. We also service clients in Bonita Springs, Florida. Visit ellenbecker.com for more details. Today, our guest is Dick Schiller. We'd like to welcome you back, Dick.
Thanks for having me, Jamie. Great to be back.
So Dick and his partner, Terry Pavlik, have been working with Ellenbecker, with Pavlik Investment Advisors for many, many years. And Dick and Terry run a core fixed income strategy for select portfolios that we offer through Ellenbecker. So we certainly welcome your knowledge, and we're very glad that you could join us back today, Dick.
Definitely. Thanks. Well, a lot to talk about.
We do. In fact, so today we're going to talk about, you know, kind of the first half of 24. I can't believe we're already in August already. That's just amazing to me. And then we're also going to cover a number of items. We're going to talk about some other factors relating to market conditions, economic updates, some of the sentiment we've seen recently. And then later in the show, we're going to share some ideas on, you know, setting investment objectives and the importance of planning in general. So with that, very excited. We've got a lot to cover today, and we'll see where it takes us, right?
Awesome.
So last show in February, we kind of came off of, you know, a good year. 2024 ended up to be a, I'm sorry, 2023 turned out to be a much better year than 2022, where the S&P 500, I think, ended up somewhere like 24%, which, you know, obviously is a nice recovery from a down year that we experienced in 22. And more recently, we've seen some volatility enter into the marketplace again here, where we saw a drawdown of about 7% in the last 2 weeks in the S&P. But what I'd like to also frame or reference is that we're still north, you know, positive about 11% year to date in the S&P 500. And the NASDAQ kind of entered correction territory with somewhere around 11%. Positive still for the year. So any thoughts, you know, Dick, on the volatility that we're experiencing as of late?
Yeah, you're spot on, Jimmy, with your timing. We really haven't seen volatility like we've seen in the last couple of weeks since October of 2022. And that almost 2 years, you can in a way get lulled to sleep a little bit and just think markets go up and to the right, to the moon forever, and with no pullbacks. And really I don't know if this eases anyone's nerves about what we've seen, but what I think is healthy is a 10% pullback. Like this is normal. Yeah. What's not normal is to have such low volatility like we've seen since that October of 2022 time period. And what's driven that low volatility that we've seen? And then the obvious question is what changed, I guess, in the last 2 to 3 weeks to have volatility, you know, rear its ugly head again? And really what got us to where we are from those lows in October 2022, growth has been strong. GDP growth, earnings growth, however you want to look at it from a company or an economic perspective, it has been strong. Inflation also has been coming down. We peaked at around 9% and have since have readings, PCE in the twos, CPI, which has a higher weighting and a lagging weighting of shelter, still in the threes. But the trend for the last 2 years has definitely been down. Because of that leads to the expectations that the Fed will cut interest rates. That be careful what you wish for. Historically, sometimes that has meant that if the Fed is cutting, that means we have more trouble ahead. But that has been reinforced with what we've seen over the last 3 weeks, that we should have a first rate cut at least in September. And then finally, there definitely has been a lot of AI enthusiasm. It's no surprise that technology is by far the you know, it's pretty much makes up all of the NASDAQ. It is over 30. Obviously, if you include some of the names within communication services, you're really closer to 40-45% of the S&P 500 are true technology names, right? Amazon included in consumer discretionary, but let's face it, AWS is running Amazon's business and profits. So, you know, if you think about the S&P 500, I call it 45% technology.
Yeah, sure.
Those indices, those numbers you mentioned, have been incredibly positive because of the rise of technology. And what that's also meant has been there are a lot of other areas of the market that just haven't really worked. They've been left behind. You can call it the other 10 gig sectors, right? This market has been technology and then everything else, right? And so part of that has driven, I think, valuations and multiples on these broader indices to relatively elevated levels compared to history. You know, we came in, at least right now before the sell-off, when the S&P was at about 5,600, we were about 23 times this year's projected EPS and earnings per share. The earnings have come in strong so far. We still have two more quarters to go, but 23 times is elevated, right? And we have a lot of expectations for those to continue. The consensus number for next year is 275 for earnings. And, you know, we'll see where they come through. I think part of a big driver of that, a lot of the major large cap tech companies have purchased AI chips. And we see that with NVIDIA. We see that with AMD's numbers. Anything related to the chips has definitely translated into positive revenue earnings fundamentals. Now it's time for all the people that have purchased those chips, the Microsofts, the Metas, the Googles of the world, who are the large purchasers. It's time for them to show revenue and earnings as a result of implementing their new high compute power chips.
Yeah, you bet.
Right? So that's, and I think the jury's still out on that a little bit. I think myself, you know, I love using Google Search with their new AI capability that's right up at the top. I brought my daughter to the Brewers game recently, and I asked it a question as if I'm talking to a friend. Can we bring a backpack? She loves bringing her little pink backpack, but it's not see-through, right? Can we bring a backpack into a Brewers game? And Google instantly told me, no, it has to be a see-through
It's bag. Fascinating.
And so I didn't have to spend the 2 or 3, 4 minutes searching Brewers.com stadium
and
rules.
Get ads and all kinds of other things that you weren't really looking to see.
Exactly. So my productivity increased. My question that I'm thinking about going forward is, okay, is Google going to make a lot more money because I just saved 3 or 4 minutes? You know, is Microsoft Copilot going to change the way our productivity levels are to the point where everyone is paying the extra $35 a month for that feature? And we'll see. Yeah. The jury's still out there.
It is fascinating. I just looked in this morning. I know today is kind of a snapshot and kind of the recent week or so that we've seen this volatility. But I think all the top four AI Mag 7 stocks were all down in double-digit territory yesterday, right? So, you know, that PE ratio you were talking about, kind of that pullback, I think a range of factors certainly recently are tying into why we're seeing what we're seeing. The economic data coming out last week on unemployment. You know, we've got obviously the events that occurred within Japan, and then obviously, you know, maybe some overbought areas of those different sectors. But nonetheless, we have a lot to cover today. Wow. I mean, we can just kind of go in and look everywhere. But kind of where I wanted to start was looking at the portfolio dynamics of a 60-40, right? So also known as a balanced portfolio. which would comprise of, you know, 60% equity, 40% fixed income or bond. Yeah, I just kind of want to break that down a little bit because there's been a lot of speculation over the last few years as to whether that portfolio is sustainable. And so let's go back into the fixed income side a little bit and just talk about, you know, what is a bond? How does that play a factor into why it makes sense to own bonds today?
Yeah, definitely. And a bond in its most simplest form is a loan, right? If I want to loan you $100, I say, here's $100, pay me back in a year. Let's say our year, our distance to maturity is 1 year. Pay me back the $100 in principal and then also interest along the way. So traditionally, a lot of our bonds, far majority of them pay semi-annual interest payments. So, and at today's market rates, fairly common to say, pay me on that $100, pay me 2.5 in 6 months, pay me another 2.5 in 12 months, and then give me my $100 back, and I have $105. So that is really how bonds work. With the investment-grade bond strategy, the only difference is the people that you're loaning money to are corporations and investment-grade corporations. So what's been really interesting in this last 2 to 3 week spout of volatility has been, if you rewind back to 2022, there was a positive correlation between bond prices and stock prices. And that is not a good thing because that means that they're both going up in price, or in 2022, they're both going down in price at the same time. So as interest rates were rising because inflation was rising, so too were bond yields. And as a result, that meant bond prices were dropping. What we've seen in the last week has been the complete opposite. And this is normal, healthy, right? When growth scares start to emerge like we've seen, when unemployment rises, bond yields fall, right? We're not talking about, will the Fed hike again? We're talking about how fast are they going to cut?
Right.
The conversation has completely shifted in the last month. And as a result, we've seen bond prices increase, right? That's a great thing. That I think has reversed some of the pain that we had in 2022 and to a lesser extent in 2023. To the detriment, though, our reinvestment yields, bonds we were purchasing back then were 6, sometimes had a 7 handle in front of them, and now they're low 5s, right? But, you know, parlaying that back into your 60-40, which we can dig in a lot, 5% is still a really, really nice yield for people. It's not the 1s, 2s, and 3s that we had for much of the 2010s.
Yes, absolutely, especially when we compare it back to where we were at, you know, over the past 15 years or so with rate, the rate environment we've been in. So with that, we've been meeting with Dick Schiller. This is Money Sense. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to Money Sense. This is Jamie Williams, Wealth Advisor with Ellenbecker Investment Group. Today we're meeting with Dick Schiller. Dick is a CFA. He's a fixed income portfolio manager that runs bond strategies for Ellenbecker, and also a wealth of knowledge when it comes to things that we were talking about before the break. We talked about 60-40. A lot of people have heard that term before. Is it relevant? You know, what are some of the factors? What is in a 60-40 portfolio, and specifically the 40, right? So we're talking about bonds, corporate bonds specifically, and yields. That really has tied in and been a major narrative for us over the last couple of years, just because, like you said before the break, 2022, positive correlation to the S&P. And recently you mentioned we're now seeing more normalization with those interest rates. So, Dick, I'm curious on kind of the Fed actions. You know, obviously they've been a little bit data dependent, and well, a lot of data dependent over the last couple of years with inflation. But let's talk about that unemployment report that came out last week.
Yeah, totally. So that unemployment report on Friday is really what caused a lot of the volatility that we've seen, and hence lower stock prices and lower yields. The report that came out was an unemployment number at 4.3%. So to look back and historically where we were, the low point was 3.4% unemployment rate in April of 2023. So fast forward 15 months, here we are at 4.3%. That's a 0.9% increase in the unemployment rate. If you look at the number on a absolute basis, 4.3 is actually fairly healthy, right? We're never going to get to zero. We're probably also never going to get to one or anything with a two handle on. We'll always have some structural form of unemployment. But the rate of increase going from 3.4 to 4.3 is worrisome. The rule that now is being widely disseminated, we were writing about it a little over a month ago, is the SOM rule, named after Claudia Sahm. This is when the three-month trailing unemployment rate increases higher than 12%, increases more than 0.5% versus the 12-month historical low in unemployment. So take that 3.4%, I know is about 15 months ago, but the trailing three-month unemployment rate with the latest one of 4.3, we're trying to like smooth out some of the data by using these trailing 3 months versus 12 months. That's increased 0.6%. So anything over 0.5% violates the SOM rule. And historically, it's been a very accurate predictor of economic recessions. It actually, to be exact, it's called 12 out of 12, going back to 1947. So, you know, and Claudia Sahm has gotten a lot of attention. She's been on CNBC a lot. She's one of the most favorite persons to talk to right now because of this. So it is causing concern. We've had other concerns out there for a while now that I'd say over the last 2 years that have been calling for a recession. We just haven't had it yet. And we could talk for hours about maybe why that is, but we've seen, you know, the yield curve inverted for now going on 2 years, about to actually, thankfully, turn back to more healthy, right, to a normal sloped yield curve. We're right on the cusp with the tens and the twos. And also, you know, the consumer confidence leading economic indicators, the LEIs have been flashing warning signs for a long time. So, you know, I think this is a really good time to just have a gut check, right? And against this backdrop, just evaluate each client's individual equity exposure. And it's not, you know, the one size doesn't fit all. It's different for every single client. And that's where conversations with your financial advisor are paramount. And honestly, that's where our value shows, right? Yeah, this is when we earn our keep, and we are busy during this time. We are answering a lot of phone calls. The quiet periods where, you know, a monkey could make money in investments, well, that's the easy part, right? And now's the part where we're going to go well above and beyond, especially the fees that we charge as investment advisors are minuscule compared to making a wrong behavioral decision during times of stress like this.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many times I've seen, you know, somebody new to us come in and just maybe share some of their previous investment philosophy, and, you know, they're really missing maybe a key ingredient to that. And really, it's something that we spend a lot of time educating our clients about in terms of their investment objective. You know, what's the purpose behind doing what we're doing? For the vast majority of people, it's, you know, they want to retire comfortably, or they want to be able to take some trips, you know, and buy a new car every few years. So it's really important to try to understand that in terms of, you know, cash flow is obviously paramount too. But when we look at the current rate environment and the Fed, you know, maybe posturing right now in a position where rates are going to start to come down, what will that do for the fixed income side of their portfolio?
Yeah, it's a great question. And we've started to see the moves already happen, especially with the latest volatility. Rates have come down. The expectations of the Fed to hike are completely off the table, whereas 3 months ago that was still being discussed. And now we're talking about how much. Coming into the year, we were, if you remember, we were expecting 7 rate cuts. And We're now in August and we haven't had any, right? So, but now those 7 is probably a little bit too much, but I have heard numbers of 3, 4, or 5 rate cuts before the end of the year. Potentially, it's more likely that we'll get a 50 basis point rate cut in September, and then we do have 2 more meetings. So, you know, 4 or 5, that's not totally out of the question. So maybe the market was right all along. It just didn't have... At least I didn't know, many market participants didn't know it would all come in the third and fourth quarter here. But we'll see, right? And the Fed is going to be continue to be data dependent, but what the data is showing is growth, you know, slowing, unemployment rising, and they do have a dual mandate, right, to keep unemployment low and to keep inflation low. And they're they've made a lot of progress on the inflation front, and now they're recognizing, hey, we might be causing problems in the job market. And so I think bond yields will come down. Let's just call it in the middle, you know, 425 basis point cuts. So that's 1% cut. What that means is that returns that we're making for clients very short term, as short term as possible in the money market fund, are going to be cut from right now the low fives, around 5.25%. And that tracks very closely to the federal funds rate. So if we get 1% of cuts by the end of the year, you should expect that rate to be about 4.25% by the end of the year.
Interesting. Yeah. You know, and we have a lot of clients that, you know, maybe take a portion of their portfolio. They've got money earmarked for something very specific. That's one of the reasons why we like the individual bond ladder strategy, because we can match some of the maturities of those bonds to things that they're needing to do, maybe required minimum distributions or some other aspect of their life or finances. But let's talk about some of the shorter term instruments that, you know, have been popular over the last couple of years, like, for example, the 6-month T-bill or the certificates of deposit. It's funny because it's the first time you've seen anybody put money in a CD in many years. And then now all of a sudden we've got people out 6 months, a year on some of these CDs coming due.
Yeah. And it makes sense because of what the shape of the yield curve has been.
Yep.
And an inverted yield curve means that shorter term rates are higher than longer term rates. So loaning out your money for 2 years has been more profitable than loaning out your money for 10 years or say. Your interest rate that you can earn is higher. So you would think, well, loaning out my money for a longer time period is inherently more risky because that person or company has 10 years to screw something up and I don't get my money back, right? If you're loaning money out for 6 months, you're like, well, is the world going to fall apart? Or is this, in a corporation standpoint, will this company declare bankruptcy in the next 6 months? That's what we're worried about for bonds. So shorter time should be less risk and therefore should carry a lower interest rate. And right now, with the Fed looking to cut, that's going to bring those short-term rates down. So, you know, I think gone are the days where you're going to see 5 or 6% returns on a 6-month CD, on a 12-month CD. I also, though, think that the longer for or higher for longer story isn't necessarily dead either. The yield curve, the longer term rates can stay flat, you know, with the U.S. Treasury rates for, you know, maybe as high as 5%, probably more low fours. But those rates can stay flat and we can just see the shorter term rates come down. And that actually gets us back to normal, right? And that's where I think our bond strategy in partnership with your asset allocation discussions with your advisors can really add a lot of value.
Yeah, it really has worked out well. And I can't remember the last time we saw CDs at 5+%. I think it was the late 90s. So with that being the case, we've been meeting with Dick Schiller from Pavlik Investment Advisors. We're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, we're going to talk more about some of the different sectors and other aspects of investing. Welcome back to Money Sense. This is Jamie Williams, Wealth Advisor with Ellen Becker Investment Group. Today, our special guest is Dick Schiller. Dick is a chartered financial analyst with Pavlik Investment Advisors. Dick also runs our fixed income core bond strategy for us. And before the break, we were talking a lot about interest rates and things. You know, I just kind of wanted to tie this back into something that we haven't talked about yet, Dick. And it's something that's taking place later this year, the election. And I'll tell you, that has got, you know, some people thinking about what would happen and typically what happens in election years. So if you want to comment on that and maybe tie it into like the U.S. debt, and I know that's also something that people are talking about, too. We'd appreciate your insight on that.
Yeah, certainly. Wait, there's an election coming up this November? Oh, that's right. That's right. No, people are starting to talk about it. Clients are bringing it up, and also, you know, it's heavy in the media, right? Like what's gone on in the U.S. political environment in the last month. It feels like it could be a good drama that was fiction, but in fact, it is real life. So it does stir up obviously a lot of emotions from both sides of the aisle. And, you know, in our seat, I think it's fascinating in the seat that you and I sit in, Jamie, because I'm sure we both have clients from both sides of the aisle. And I'm sure we have clients that are both heavily invested into one side or the other. And we have clients that don't really care, right?
Right.
That aren't plugged in. So I always like to take a step back and think about, you know, what is the true data show? And I think there are a couple things that people might not totally factor into their investment analysis. One of the first pieces is people say, well, you know, what does the stock market perform better in? Does it perform better with a Republican president or a Democratic president? And, you know, it's a little bit of a narrow view because part of that is dependent on also who controls Congress, right? And the base result is that I think markets really do not like uncertainty. So there's historically been more volatility leading up to elections, hence what we've gone through. It wasn't necessarily driven by the change of politics, maybe not, probably more so not some of the other things we were talking about with unemployment, geopolitics being more of a factor. But it's kind of just like it is on investors' minds, it's in the back of the market's minds, right? The market, it is people, right? And people are emotional, right? And there is a psychological aspect to this. And, you know, tensions are rising, right? And so part of what is consistent from the data is that leading up to elections, we have had increased volatility. That's both to the upside and to the downside. And then post-election, the fourth quarter, you know, when we get to the second half of the fourth quarter past November, generally have been positive, strong months in election years and in non-election years. So they call it the Santa Claus rally. We generally look past them. And a big part of that is the uncertainty. Knock on wood, we won't be doing recounts or anything like that. We will know who's in the White House. We will know who is in Congress. And historically, especially a divided government generally keeps politics at bay. We don't have crazy pushing one too far one way or the other going every which way. My hope is that we come to some sort of a divided government so that we don't have to talk about politics as much, right?
Yeah.
Both sides will be kept in check. We will see what happens. I think there is some play you can do around more of a sector rotation if you're looking specifically to, you know, clean energy is a very, very topical one. What's been fascinating to watch, though, is people also need to remember that the market is forward-looking. So the clean energy stocks, they actually performed the best when Trump was in office. And since Biden has been in office, it's been really a staircase down for them. Not an elevator down, but a staircase ride down. And the exact opposite has been the case for energy. You know, a lot of clients think, well, you know, Republicans or Trump, their tagline's drill, drill, drill. So that means oil companies are going to be making money hands over fist. Well, actually, we had so much supply, and then COVID, you know, put an asterisk, you know, pre-COVID and post-COVID times, but energy companies didn't perform very well during the Trump administration. And you fast forward to the Biden administration, energy companies have performed great, right? Especially in 2021, when we saw, you know, prices over $100 a barrel in oil and $5 of gas at the pump. And so the opposite of what you think would be true has actually come true. And part of it is you really have to be forward looking. So I think the jury's still out in November. Many of the polls show it's a neck and neck race. So I think a key, though, for us as advisors for clients is maybe do some subtle tweaks. You know, if you feel really strongly one candidate's going to win over the other, you know, maybe you can add a little energy or take out a little energy from your portfolio. But what I really try to harp down and to avoid is to not making big drastic changes. That it's very tempting to want to do that, but historically the data shows that just doesn't prove profitable over the long term.
Right. I think staying disciplined, having a strategy that works for you, that's built on high quality, diversification, and then cost Those are all factors that really are important, especially as we evaluate our client portfolios and try to make sure that we get it right. Kind of tailing back on that conversation we talked about earlier about investment objectives and the reason behind why we're doing what we're doing. I did want to also just kind of, you know, share, you know, I think in the vast history of elections going back in time, stock market is typically done a little bit better in past history, if I'm not mistaken. Is that what your findings are, Dick?
Yeah. And it goes back to that removing uncertainty. Post elections, just getting over that hump of knowing what the backdrop is. You know, my guess would be that especially if we find ourselves in a divided government, then the best result, what the markets want to hear is that we don't have to guess our more radical ideas, both on the left and the right, going to come. If we have a split Congress and split with the White House as well, that's a good sign. One of the things that does keep me up at night is just the level of debt that we have here in the U.S. And it's not the level of debt. I get it. You know, 120% of GDP. That is a it's not breaking the bank currently, but it's more about the percent of interest rate that we're paying on that debt that keeps me up at night. And you know, I'm not smart enough to know when exactly it will be a problem, but it's pretty obvious to me that the pace that we're on is not a sustainable path. You know, when we talk about buying bonds, well, if rates are going down, we want to extend duration, right? I want to lock in that 5-6% for 10 years. I want to go out and buy a 10-year bond. If rates are going up, we want the opposite. We want to be, you know, staying relatively short to duration. That's where a 10-year bond ladder is naturally more short, an average of 4.5 years or so. The U.S. government has a lot of debt that is very short term. So as interest rates have risen, they're paying more and more and more on their debt, right? And so that's worrisome to me. The debt, it kind of compounds, right? You're adding more debt, and then also that debt is getting more expensive. It's the double whammy. It reminds me a little bit in the inverse relation of a first-time home buyer looking to buy a home. Well, they've gotten squeezed twice. Prices are higher, and also the interest cost is higher. And the U.S. government has found themselves in a similar situation. So, you know, a lot of other countries across the globe, no one is really the ideal candidate out there. So maybe we're the best-looking pig of the bunch. But that I'm not sure when that's going to come to roost, but I could see that being a major issue down the road.
It's really quite profound how what we're experiencing today with housing prices and interest rates is almost the exact opposite of what we found post-financial crisis in 2008-09.
Exactly. To tie it back just to the politics really quickly is, unfortunately, neither party has the political will to get our debt under order, right? And you know, on one side, we're talking more tax cuts and tariffs, and on the other side, we're talking more spending. And both of those don't bode well for the national debt and our costs there.
Well, with that, we're going to leave it there and take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to tie it back into some other ideas that surround, you know, planning and considerations for putting together a solid plan. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Money Sense. This is Jamie Williams with Ellen Becker Investment Group. I'm here with Dick Schiller. Before the break, we were talking about a lot of things that surround, you know, kind of like the landscape ahead, you know, the election coming up later this year, as well as Fed actions, interest rates, covered a lot. So, you know, I think one of the things that I like to put in perspective when we sit down and meet with our clients is that if they're, you know, feeling, concerned, or they have certain things that maybe this is new to them. For many of our clients, they've been through this before. They've seen different market, you know, kind of inflection points in history. And quite frankly, I mean, we're coming off of a great 23. That was a great year. This first half of the year has been great, but there's always going to be kind of some of the things ahead that we're not clear about. So I like to tie it back to planning. You know, when people ask questions about things like we were talking about the national debt, or they're talking about geopolitical, You know, I think if we're able to sit down and kind of understand what is involved with their personal circumstances, and then we look at those things I mentioned earlier, quality and diversification, and making sure that their plan is tailored to their needs for them and their family, you know, typically starting with their estate plan. That's where we like to lead off, because we want to make sure that that is 100% reviewed and covered, and then taxes, you know, because that's another big aspect of all of this, is tying it in from a tax perspective. But there was a concept that has come up, and many people may have heard of it, the 4% rule. Have you heard of the 4% rule, Dick?
Yeah, sure. Spending down 4% of your principal through retirement.
Yeah, so simply put, the 4% rule is a concept that's been around and probably debated more than anything in the financial community. Is 4% too much? Is it not enough? Well, and you know, I guess I would answer that with, it definitely depends. So the 4% rule is just trying to design or understand, if you take all of your investment assets for a 30-year period and incorporate taxes, how much can I spend? So that number is definitely going to be different for people based on their lifestyle and everything. But I think it's also important to understand what, you know, their portfolio composition is, what their net worth balance sheet looks like, and their other statement. So definitely it chimes to flexibility, right? Because in good market years, people have a much different outlook on their spending than when maybe the market's down. Like we've seen, what, 3 times since 2008? 15, 18, and 22. So just to get your thoughts on that, Dick, you know, technology, I know we use technology in your business to do analysis. Have you had any positive experiences with using some sort of retirement software or something like that?
Yeah, entirely. We've been rolling out a new financial planning software tool called Right Capital. Another one that is awesome out on the market is MoneyGuide Pro. Those two are really the largest market share providers of this type of software, and it's great because it's another voice in the room instead of just maybe advisor and client saying this is where we should be for spending, or this is how we should be for asset allocation, and maybe they agree, maybe they don't, but then now we can say this is what the software suggests, right? And look, no one knows what the future holds, right? Coming into 2020, no one knew a global pandemic was going to start, and by February 15th, the whole world would be shut down, right? That wasn't in anyone's 2020 outlook, right? And so the whole point of having a plan, though, in place is to be like, okay, this happened. No one saw it coming. What does the plan say? Let's reread it.
Yeah, exactly.
We have a couple personal clients that say, you know, when we have a pullback of 10%, I want you to move some of that money market fund out of the money market, and I want you to buy stocks. And I say, we're going to do it, right? I'm going to do it. We're going to hold you to it. And what I personally don't do is I don't call them all the time and say, hey, how do you feel? Because what do you think they're going to say? Well, this is going to get worse before it gets better, right? The world's falling apart. You're crazy. So the whole point, though, is having a plan in place, having rule-based system of investing, and the worst thing, you know, you could possibly do is panic sell when markets falter. So that's where you need to set that asset allocation that helps you sleep at night. That's where bonds come into the portfolio. It parlays a lot into your 4% spending rule. You touched on a good point. The most ideal window you can do is start with that 4% rule, but when markets are tough, you know, can you maybe go buy with 3%? And then when we have a 30% up year, take that extra vacation, go
Absolutely.
Spend 5%, right? And and so, but that is a great rule of thumb. People have Social Security, some people have pensions, and then the last thing that, you know, Jamie, you could talk on that I deal with a lot with clients is that balance between illiquid assets, maybe private equity and or especially real estate. We see real estate a lot and liquid assets. If we have a client that maybe is, you know, 70% of their net worth is in illiquid real estate and 30% is in liquid stocks and bonds, at some point, especially if the client has 5, 10, 20 more years to live, at some point that needs to come back into better balance, right? We don't like people being house rich and cash poor.
Oh, definitely. Run into it all the time, especially with people that have conviction toward investing in physical real estate or physical, you know, properties like maybe precious metals, things of that nature. How do those things really factor in and tie into your plan? But like you said, you know, the financial planning software does help us understand kind of where we're going. It's a snapshot in time, gives us kind of a probability of success. It's not an end all be all. This is, hey, we're locking this plan down and this is what it's going to look like. So we want to design flexibility in the planning and make sure that everybody, you know, it's tailored to their own unique objectives. So, you know, a couple thoughts on that too, is that when people are feeling like, hey, I'm uncertain, I want to retire in 3 years, can I do that? Then at least having a tool that I, by the way, I dreamt about this type of software about 20 years ago when I embarked on my financial planning career. And today, you know, it's reality. We actually have something that is basically like a calculator that kind of tells us, it even has the ability to measure the risk in the portfolio based on empirical data. So with that being the case, Dick, we, you know, really appreciate your insight on this today. And, you know, kind of in closing, I just, you know, wanted to get some thoughts. Maybe we could spend just a couple minutes on, you know, a couple of the investment sectors, the tech, AI, and then crypto, because that's been something that's kind of come back this year too, in terms of those asset classes, that how they've performed this year, and, you know, back to that rotation thing we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, technology, when you set an investment thesis, especially for stocks in the equity markets, you have to either take a bullish or a bearish bet around tech. If you don't own any tech in your portfolio, you are taking a massive, massive bearish play against technology, right? And you're going to win and die based on how technology performs. So, you know, it has been the darling of the last, call it 5, 10, you know, even 15 years, going back to 2008, right? I think some people are driving that to compare that to 2001. And, you know, I put a couple asterisks around that, and that the technology companies of today, especially the Magnificent Seven, are incredibly profitable, and they're growing, right? So it isn't just, you know, throw pets.com out there and have just an idea, not even a website, right, and give it a $2 billion valuation. And they go out and, you know, IPO and sell a lot of shares. And people say, well, it has a .com behind it, it's going to be worth $10 billion, right? It's the idea of, I'm just going to sell this to a greater fool down the road at a higher price, isn't necessarily surrounding a Microsoft and Apple and Amazon. Even right. There are a lot of growing revenues, earnings, and cash flow at these companies. So we'll have to see, though. But, you know, they're priced as such, too. They're priced to really, really high valuations. And I think a lot of what we've seen just in the last 2 weeks has just been a reset. And it ultimately, stock prices move with earnings. So we'll see if they can continue their positive revenue and earnings growth in the future. That's what it'll come down to.
Not to mention, I mean, just the unparalleled growth, despite the pullback that we've seen, you know, in some of these stocks this year. Very interested to see what some of the large institutional investors are looking at, especially with, you know, kind of Buffett and some of the other people out there that are making some big shifts. But Dick, we really appreciate your insight today, and want to share with our guests that if they have any additional questions or want to learn more, we do want to let you know that we hope that we've made a difference in your personal and financial well-being, given you some insights that maybe you hadn't considered in the past. If you enjoyed today's show and want to learn more about EIG and our upcoming events, please visit ellenbecker.com. Give our office a call at 262-691-3200. Again, I'm Jamie Williams, Wealth Advisor with Ellen Becker Investment Group, and we've been meeting with Dick Schiller of Pavlik Investment Advisors. Thank you, Dick, for your insights today.
Thanks so much, Jamie. This is always a lot of fun.
Thank you.